know, people have to want to be here, number one. They have to want to be in the role that they're in. And, you know, we have to all move forward. Again, when I've not had success, it's when, you know, some people are pulling in one direction. There will be a very clear vision, a very clear process for how we do things within the walls of the football program.
Well, we just heard from Matt Rhule, and we're also going to hear from Hugh Freeze. We have a very big day planned for you here on Always College Football. It's the Tuesday, November 29th edition of Always College Football. I'm Greg McElroy, here with you as always. We appreciate so much you coming to us from wherever it is you're coming to us from. Well, that's ESPN's YouTube channel. If you're here with us via the podcast, please like, rate, and subscribe. It helps us out. It helps the show out. We have an awesome show in store for you today, talking a little bit about how cool this collection of teams is that is currently vying for a college football playoff spot. Just the differences and the fact that right now, man, we have the possibility of not one but two teams going to the playoff for the first time. And I would tell you here in a minute why I don't look at it like, well, you have three blue blood programs and then a team that's a small brand. I strongly disagree with that context. I think it's ludicrous. I'll tell you why here in just a minute. I also think that it's worth noting right now how many different job openings are either coming or going. And there are so many guys that are going all over the place, and Hugh Freeze is going from Liberty to Auburn, and yeah, Matt Rhule is out. Now he's coming back in. It's like, it's almost difficult to wrap your head around. So I feel like we need to take a little time today during the show and tell you exactly right now, snapshot, here's what's open, here's what's filled, and here are the guys that, you know, are potentially, you know, going to be maybe filling some of those spots. So we'll look at all those things here in just a moment. We're also going to get into the mailbag. It's Tuesday. We always try to get into the mailbag. So figure we should take some questions from you. So let's not waste any time. Let's talk about the playoff field first. Let's start there and let's talk about it. All right. It's been for a long time, and I don't know how you guys have felt about this, but I have always been of the belief that new blood is good for college football. I've felt that in a four-team playoff, new blood would be exceptional for college football. And we've seen different variations, especially in recent years, where teams have had chances to get in. Sometimes they've punched their ticket. Sometimes they've lost at some point in the final stretch to make it to the college football playoff. Some of the notable teams that have been right there so close, Utah, a good example. They had a chance a few years back, lost in the conference championship game. And as a result, they were left out. TCU and Baylor have been in the spot before. It's been a while for TCU and it's been a while for Baylor, but they weren't that far away in Baylor a couple years back. I mean, Baylor, of course, went to the Sugar Bowl just a year ago. We've seen several other teams that have also been within striking distance of a playoff berth. Iowa comes to mind. We've seen a North Carolina team that almost made it to the college football playoff. That was back in 2015. Iowa was the same year. Could you imagine Iowa, Clemson, Alabama, and Iowa, Clemson, Alabama, and North Carolina being the four teams that made up the 2015 championship contingent? Would have been wild, but it was actually a very real possibility. So we've seen several teams come within striking distance, but now, for the first time in a long time, it feels like we're entering into a world in which there are really different teams that might be considered. Welcome to the party, USC Trojans. Where you been, man? I mean, you were at one point, remember, just a few years ago, it hasn't been that long ago, man. I mean, at one point, USC was the hottest team in college football when the final regular season game was played. They went on to win the Pac-12. They went on to win the Rose Bowl against Penn State in what was an epic clash against Penn State there in the Rose Bowl. 2017 Rose Bowl, if you will. That was January 1st of 2017. It was an incredible game. Just an incredible back and forth game. Trace McSorley against Sam Darnold. And it was just one thing after another. Well, SC, since that point, never really got to a position where they can actually punch their ticket. Why? Because they had so many missteps throughout the course of the Clay Helton era. And I think what's most exciting about both SC and TCU being in the mix this year. Now, will they get in? We're going to find out, right? I mean, there's still games to be played, and we will break those games down here in the next couple days, there's no doubt. But what I think is most exciting about those two teams being in is that here today in the portal era, you can go from worst to first like that. You can have a first-year head coach come in, bring a Heisman Trophy contending, I'm not going to say winning yet because he hasn't won yet, but Caleb Williams, certainly the guy to beat at SC as the Heisman Trophy winner. You can change your fortune or misfortune, if you will, from 4-8 to now 11-1. Your one loss being by one on the road to an elite team that you're playing in the Pac-12 championship game again, and you might be able to avenge that loss. That's remarkable. That's one benefit. We talk so much about all the negatives of the portal and how it makes life so difficult and how it does create issues when it comes to coaching players and how guys aren't willing to persevere through the adversity they once did. Yet there are problems with the portal. There's also, right now, there's like a 38% placement. If you enter the portal, the likelihood of getting a scholarship on the other side is like 38%. It's not high. Those are archaic numbers. I need updated numbers. I don't have them for you right now because there's been about 17,000 kids that have entered the portal in the last 24 hours. And there will be plenty more here coming up in the week on December 6th when the portal officially opens. So we'll talk about the portal and its downfall here in a little bit of time. But look at SC. 4-8 a year ago, fire their coach, bring in Lincoln Riley, make a major commitment to college football again. Say, we're going to commit $115 million to our head coach. We're going to go and we're going to be players in NIL. We're going to be players when it comes to, you know, going after and trying to seek out some of the best players in the portal in the country. They do. Now they are a win away from getting to the college football playoff for the very first time. And people have always said, well, you know, if you're a small brand, you can't get into the playoff. Y'all, that is so not true. Now, I'm not going to lie to you. I think that especially based on what I've seen from this committee does seem to be a little bit influenced by brands, more so than maybe others. This committee feels like they are the tiniest bit influenced by, you know, the benefit of the doubt has been given. I feel like on a couple different occasions as the rankings have been released, two teams that have had success in recent years. There's absolutely no justifiable reason why Clemson was number 4 in the initial college football playoff ranking when TCU, with a stronger resume, sat at number 7. There was no reason whatsoever. So I do think that if you're a team like TCU, there it is, maybe a slightly steeper hill to climb. But I would also say, is TCU really a small brand? I'm honestly wondering this because I know some of you look at them, and if you're Ohio State, you're probably looking at like, yeah, TCU's a small brand. If you're Alabama, you're probably like, well, heck yeah. Like, yeah, I mean, I understand. Like, yes, they're maybe not as big as Ohio State. Maybe they're not going to command as many eyeballs as Ohio State does. Shoot, Ohio State has 1 million living alumni. Okay, so maybe the audience that they capture won't be as significant as some of the major players in college football. Sure, that's probably accurate. But tell me this, was there a stronger brand in the 2000s than Boise State? Like Boise State, I know it might not necessarily every time they teed it up. Boise State, they were pretty entertaining to watch. They won almost all of their games. They became synonymous with BCS bowl games and pulling off major upsets. Like that was a ridiculously strong brand. Now, I know they weren't the strongest brand, okay? So those of you Florida fans and LSU fans and, you know, and Bama fans and Michigan fans and Ohio State fans and like I Oklahoma and USC, like I know. Okay, I'm not saying that they're a bigger brand. Boise's not a bigger brand than any of y'all, okay? I get it. I'm not saying that they are. All I'm saying is that they were as consistent and as synonymous with the postseason big game as anybody. They were so consistent. They were so dependable. And you knew what you were going to get every time they took the field. That, to me, is a strong brand. Tell me this about TCU. Now, I know the last couple years they've fallen on hard times. No doubt they have. I know the last couple years of the Gary Patterson tenure hasn't been great. But think about alongside Boise State 10, 12, 13 years ago or so. I mean, this is a team that has won a Rose Bowl. This is a team that has been undefeated in the regular season. It's a team that has been to BCS and New Year's Six bowl games. It's a team that has dominated teams in the New Year's Six. I know they haven't won the elusive outright Big 12 championship. They shared one back in 2014. This is a team that has been in the top 10, top 5 in some cases, a time or two in the last 6 or 7 years. Like, TCU is not that small of a brand. TCU, I might add, a couple years ago, I believe it was 2017. TCU, last I checked, it might have been 2018. I think it was 2018. TCU, last time I checked, had a remarkably impressive performance against Ohio State in a non-conference game. So I don't look at TCU as this little upstart team that's just coming out of nowhere and what a great story. Like, no, TCU has been good for a very long time. So I'll wrap that up in saying, let's stop by saying, oh, well, we got these small brands, this little engine that could, TCU. TCU's got deep pockets. They have a winning tradition. They have a winning culture, and they've been winning there for a very long time. I'm not surprised to see them in this spot. Now, am I surprised that, you know, they've been as good as they've been in Sonny Dykes' first year? No. Yes, of course I'm surprised. Nobody had TCU in the playoff. I liked them coming into the year, but in the playoff, that felt far-fetched. I thought it was ridiculous that people were mentioning USC as a playoff team because I didn't think they'd be as good in the front seven defensively or along the offensive line as they needed to be a legitimate contender for a playoff spot. But either way, man, it's very, very exciting to see that USC can get that good that fast and now find themselves just one win away from the postseason, being in the 4-team field, and TCU being in a great spot after years and years and years of being close. Feels like they're now going to punch their ticket. Very exciting. But all things considered, man, this is very good for college football. You have a couple of mainstays that are still in the mix. Okay? You got Ohio State still in the mix. Alabama still somewhat in the mix. Not in control of their own destiny, but we'll find out where the committee has them tonight when we see how things are kind of all lined up. You got Georgia, a mainstay, obviously in the mix. Going to likely be the number one overall seed. You got some teams that have been in the past, right? You got a team in Michigan that punched their ticket last year, but they've been there before. And then you got a couple of teams that are potentially pursuing the playoff spot for the very first time. So it's a very exciting postseason run right now. Very exciting. So I hope you're enjoying it as much as we are. We will, without question, take a peek at some of these rankings coming up tonight, because tonight might be the most important rankings release that we've had in quite a while. In the event of an upset this weekend, where, say, Utah knocks off USC, who's going to be next in line? Because the next teams, none of which are going to be playing in a game this weekend. So will they potentially show their hand this week by showing us exactly how it might all reveal itself if there is an upset this weekend? So just an incredible year. This is a little bit of a victory lap, exciting victory lap, so to speak, for everything. It's been an incredible year with some incredible storylines. Nothing's done yet, but it's cool to have a couple mainstays, some teams that are there or at least on the fringe every year, a team that's returning for the second time, but they've still felt a bit like an underdog all year long in Michigan, and two teams that haven't been here in quite a while. It's awesome. It's a great spot to be in. I hope you're enjoying it as much as we are.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Every college football season, Goodyear knows the importance of winning on the road. The road will always demand confidence, the confidence to handle whatever the journey brings and to perform under tough conditions. And just like the players and the fans of college football, Goodyear is ready. Are you ready for the road? Visit Goodyear.com to find the right Goodyear tires for whatever road you're on this season. Goodyear, more driven. All right, a familiar face returns to the Southeastern Conference. Hugh Freeze is officially going to become the next head coach of the Auburn Tigers. This is really not that surprising if you take a look at everything. We kind of walked you through this a few weeks ago when they decided to let go of Brian Harsin. We've kind of had our finger on the pulse of this entire situation from the very beginning. They started their search by going after Lane Kiffin. Lane Kiffin was in pursuit, and I think Lane Kiffin, regardless of what's said publicly, there was real, legitimate mutual interest on both sides. Now, what happened with Lane Kiffin is that things just got a little bit too drawn out. People started reporting that it was a done deal, which I think made Lane very uncomfortable. He had to come out and be strong in his press conference, and as a result, he couldn't really backtrack on that press conference. So I look at just how the way everything went down with Lane Kiffin and the relationship with Auburn, it just felt like everything with Auburn was moving a little bit too slow and Lane wanted to pick things up. And ultimately, the timing just wasn't ideal for the two sides to meet and eventually come to terms. So they decided to go in the other direction. Lane did and Auburn did. They both went their separate ways. Lane has now re-signed a deal with Ole Miss. He's in great shape. He's going to win a lot of games. He's going to be very happy there for the foreseeable future. They then took their attention and started to focus on Hugh Freeze. He wasn't the only one they focused on. They also had conversations with Carnell Cadillac Williams. He was the interim coach at the time. And they wanted to look and gauge the interest of a couple other candidates. A few are probably obvious. A few you might not think much about. There were also a few that were completely removed from the possibility because they're playing on Championship Saturday. And Auburn didn't feel like they could wait an additional week. They had to hit the ground running on the recruiting trail because right now the recruiting class is in a tough spot. And the roster needs to be totally upgraded at several different positions. So they felt like timing was of the utmost importance to get this done and get this done as quickly as humanly possible. So they turned their attention to Hugh Freeze. He's their guy. He has tremendous support from some of the decision makers that are calling the shots down at Auburn. That's not always the athletic director and that's not always the school president. So he was the hand-picked selection by those that run the program. Interpret that as you will. What I will also say about Hugh Freeze is this hire does come with a certain level of criticism. People are going to be uncovering different things about Hugh Freeze. People are going to be trying to look into Hugh Freeze's past. People are going to be very outspoken about whether or not Hugh Freeze should be the head coach at Auburn. They're going to document what happened at Ole Miss. They're going to document things that could have potentially happened when he was the head coach at Liberty. They're going to try to pull skeletons out of every possible closet. And I think there will be several people that are very adamantly opposed to Hugh Freeze having this opportunity. It's a polarizing hire, and I think it's a hire that some Auburn fans will be very, very disappointed in. All that being said, if you turn your attention to the field, Hugh Freeze does have a proven track record in the league of having put together a successful program. You're going to say, well, he did it a certain way that shouldn't be done. Well, I'm not going to speak on that because right now in the current era of college football, he has coached and led the Liberty Flames to back-to-back-to-back-to-back 8 or more win seasons. That's not an easy thing to do. 4 consecutive years in which he had his team playing at a high level. He's also 3-0 in bowl games as the head coach of the Liberty Flames. Of course, this would be his fourth year. They are bowl eligible, but they will not be participating as the head coach for Liberty at this juncture. 8-5, 10-1, 8-5, 8-4. That's where they're at right now. So he's done a pretty dang good job of building a program there at Liberty that is sustainable, that has been, for the most part, very, very, very solid. They beat Arkansas just a few weeks ago. Prior to his stint at Liberty, if you look at just the field, what went down at Ole Miss in 2012, not great, okay? Not a great performance by any stretch of the imagination. They, of course, had a lot of wins that were vacated. But if you look at just overall exactly where they're at, they were at their best, a 10-win football team. There in 2015, they went on to win the Sugar Bowl. That's a significant achievement for Ole Miss. The year before, they were sitting as a solid contestant there. They ended up beating Alabama in back-to-back years, both 2014 and 2015. They got to the Peach Bowl there in 2014, where they ultimately got destroyed by TCU. But either way, two really quality years for Hugh Freeze and his team. And then in 2016, it didn't go quite as well. But either way, this guy has led a program in the past, and he has won big games in the past. Now, there are a few things that I am the littlest bit concerned about. There are some things about whether or not Hugh Freeze is going to be able to handle the pressure cooker that Auburn's job is. A lot of people have said he's can get a little bit flustered. He can get a little bit frustrated. He can get a little bit angry if he is, I guess, the subject of kind of, if the team plays poorly and people attack him, he will get a little bit upset by that. That is going to be just part of the job. You're at a heavily scrutinized position when you're the head coach at Auburn. You have to have thick skin. Will he display that throughout the course of his tenure? I also think the game has changed ever so slightly since he was last at Ole Miss. Coaching in the SEC from a week-to-week-to-week basis, he helped bring in and usher in a new era in the SEC, I might add. When he took over at Ole Miss in 2012, the league really prided itself along the line of scrimmage, both offensively and defensively. Well, he knew at Ole Miss that if they just try to run it down people's throats, it wasn't going to work. They had to implement the RPO. They had to figure out ways to outscore the competition. And he did so by really kind of bringing in a new era and, hey, illegal men downfield, tempo. He is a great offensive mind. But the rest of the world is now kind of doing what Hugh Freeze did 10 years ago. What made him innovative is kind of the offense du jour of college football nowadays. So how will he continue to change? How will he continue to evolve? And what will he do as a counterpunch to what Ole Miss did back in the day? You can't just do what he did 10 years ago. Everybody does it. It's not innovative anymore. So I think he will. I think he's got new tricks up his sleeve, and it'll be very interesting. And then finally, how good will he be in the portal? Because I think it's going to be very much expected of him to get in the portal and attract players today. Are players going to flock from all over the country to play for him? That's why I thought Lane Kiffin was such an attractive option for Auburn. Why? Because he is a destination for players that are in the portal that want to go play in an NFL type of system that will put them in position to stockpile numbers and position them to potentially get drafted at some point in the very near future. I don't know if Hugh Freeze is going to be able to bring in and attract players from every single corner of the world the same way Lane Kiffin was going to be able to do that. How good will he be in the portal is a significant question. And I think at the same time, Auburn has been a place that has very, very high expectations, and we've documented the challenge that it is being the head coach at Auburn, because it's not always about what you do. It's about how you do relative to Alabama and relative to Georgia. If Hugh Freeze is a 10-win team, but their two losses come against Alabama and Georgia, there's going to be some of the fan base that is a little upset with that. Now, I think that's ludicrous, but that's just par for the course. How will he do against Alabama and Georgia? Doesn't matter if Hugh Freeze is the coach or whoever's the coach. Whoever's the coach at Auburn, that's always going to be front and center of the minds of many. So it is a very interesting hire. I'll be fascinated to see how things work out and what type of staff Hugh Freeze is able to put together, because if he can put together a good staff that can recruit nationally and that will become very much a fixture in the portal, because Auburn fans don't expect Auburn to be down for long. They're going to have to be back and be back very, very soon. Will guys flock from everywhere to play under Hugh Freeze at Auburn? We'll find out. But either way, this is a pretty obvious hire, especially knowing that things didn't work out with Lane Kiffin. They turned their attention on Hugh Freeze. It just took a little longer than most of us anticipated.
McElroy, what is the ceiling for Auburn under Hugh Freeze?
The ceiling for Auburn is always to win an SEC championship, to get to a college football playoff, and to potentially win a national championship. I mean, Auburn's done that in the last 12 years. They have won and been to multiple SEC championships. They have been to multiple national championships in the last 12 years. So, look, I think there's a lot of similarities between Hugh Freeze and Gus Malzahn. But the one thing that Gus Malzahn was able to do on a very regular basis, which I think is going to be very important for Hugh, is Gus Malzahn was able to knock off Georgia and knock off Alabama more regularly than most coaches. Most teams, obviously different era now for Georgia. Georgia's been a different animal since Kirby Smart took over, but Gus Malzahn, he beat Mark Richt pretty regularly. He also beat Nick Saban more than just about anybody. Had a handful of wins against him over the course of his 10, 12 years at Auburn as both an assistant and as the head coach. So maybe that wasn't that long, 8, 9 years, however many it was. He had a pretty decent track record against Nick Saban. So, I mean, the ceiling for Auburn is always because of where they're at, the league that they're in, the amount of money that they have, the amount of opportunity that they can potentially provide. Ceiling is always going to be getting to the SEC championship, winning the SEC championship. You do those two things, you're obviously going to go to the college football playoff, and you have an outside chance of potentially winning it. So that would be my expectation level, and anything less, you're settling. And I would never expect a program like Auburn to settle.
Do you have ambitious hiring goals for the last quarter of 2022? With a powerful hiring partner, big goals are no big deal. You need Indeed. Indeed is the hiring platform where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. Find top talent fast with Indeed's suite of powerful hiring tools like Indeed Instant Match, assessments, and virtual interviews. Indeed makes hiring all in one place so easy because it takes 10 minutes or less for most small business employers to post a job, according to Indeed Data US. Indeed also has a jaw-dropping pool of talent. In fact, 3 out of 4 U.S. online job seekers search for jobs on Indeed each month, according to Comscore. Join over 3 million businesses worldwide using Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to sponsor your job post at Indeed.com/always. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 offer.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
All right, let's move into the mailbag a little bit. Coops, kick it off.
All right, first one comes from Lucas. If Georgia, Michigan, or TCU lose their conference championship games, do you see any of them not making the playoffs?
I think they're in. I mean, it's almost, it's one of those that people trying to figure out ways to keep TCU out. Like, what do you, I mean, okay, you lose to to one team in your 13th game. If you here's the thing that I have to evaluate Alabama, Tennessee, and Ohio State with. Like, almost the 13th game needs to kind of be irrelevant, because if we're evaluating Ohio State by a 12-team schedule and Bama by a 12-team schedule, 12-game schedule, and Tennessee by a 12-game schedule, shouldn't we also evaluate Georgia, Michigan, and TCU? I mean, I think all that is very fair at this point, I might add. Now, you get to USC, you have to take into account that they have the 13th game. And that data point is significant because if you look at them, if they were to potentially lose, then they would fall to 11-2. And I can see why that would potentially push them out because they don't have a ridiculously strong resume. Not that Ohio State does, but Ohio State does have a fairly convincing victory against a team that's probably going to be ranked 9th, 8th, wherever Penn State ends up. That's a pretty convincing victory at their house. I know it wasn't pretty for three quarters, but the fourth quarter was really pretty for the Ohio State Buckeyes against the Penn State Nittany Lions. So I think you look at everything, it's very difficult for me to justify. And I always try to look at it, hey, this is not that dissimilar to being a lawyer and trying to make a case on behalf of Ohio State, Alabama, or Tennessee. Like, if I'm a lawyer, it's very difficult for me to make a case on behalf of Ohio State over a 12-1 TCU that lost in the conference championship game. I don't know if I can make a case over the likes of Bama against a 12-1 Michigan that lost to Purdue. People are going to say, well, it's an unranked team. I get that. I understand that. But Bama also didn't play on conference championship Saturday when Michigan did. And Michigan has really nice performance against Penn State, a team that has a similar record to the three teams we're discussing. No one's making a case for Penn State to be in the playoff, but either way, Penn State has the same record as Tennessee and as Alabama. So Michigan beat them convincingly and ran for nearly 400, I believe, in the process. And then, of course, Georgia. Do I really need to explain why Georgia, if they were to lose to a pretty solid 9-3 LSU team, why they should get in? Because they already beat one of the teams that's in the conversation. And, like you said, 12-game sample size, must compare the other teams with an equally impressive 12-game sample size. Well, they have a win against a team in the top 10. And Georgia did a really good job throughout the course of the year, obviously dominating an Oregon team, dominating other teams as well. South Carolina in week 3 or whatever that was, South Carolina is going to be in the top 25 now. I mean, Georgia, no. Those three teams, if they lose, doesn't matter. They should be in. If the committee takes them out, I'm going to have a huge issue. You might want to check in next Monday because I will lose my mind.
Sounds good. All right, next one from Rodney. What are your thoughts on coaches getting fired during the season? In the past, doing so seemed classless. But ever since Kiffin got fired midseason at USC, it seems like it's happened more often.
I don't like it personally, because I think you owe it to the players that are on the team to finish the right way. Like, I don't like the interim tag. The bowl game's one thing. Like, bowl game, whatever. Like, I almost feel like we all love bowl games. I love bowl games just like you probably do. I love playing in them. I love watching them. I watch every single bowl game, all 41 of them. I will watch every single one, every single second of every single one, I might add, if possible, assuming I'm not on the air against another bowl game, right? I love bowl games. They're one of my favorite things. It's a great celebration for the season that you've had. And anyone that tells you it doesn't matter, I disagree with that too, because you win your bowl game, it gives you pretty good momentum heading into next year. All right. So I think that there's a lot of positives that come with playing in a bowl game, participating in the bowl game, and all this other stuff. But either way, you have an interim coach in a bowl game, I don't care. It's not that big a deal. However, if you have an interim coach for a 5 or 6 game period, there are examples in which I think it's okay. A la of Wisconsin. You want to take a look at Jimmy Leonard? Hey, let's see if Jimmy Leonard can kind of get this program going. Let's see if he can kind of jumpstart the engine here and see if we need to just make him our head coach in the future, but we get a 6-7 game sample size to evaluate him and assess whether or not he's suited for the job. I think that situation makes a little bit more sense. However, most of the time it doesn't. I do think that right now there is a real sense of urgency among athletic directors and decision makers, because there is a perception that if you don't get out in front of your coaching search process, then you are basically punting on this recruiting class. Remember, we totally destroyed the recruiting calendar. Now guys are signing in the middle of December. So now that the recruiting calendar is all totally on its head It's really messed up and expedited the process of getting rid of your guy in an effort to figure out who the next guy is going to be. The problem is, let's use the example for Auburn. Auburn decides to fire Brian Harsin at the end of October. I get it. Didn't like how the team was playing. No big deal. Cadillac Williams leads them to a 2-2 record. It's fine. But did they benefit on their recruiting search of a new coach from doing it earlier in the process? No, they didn't. They ended up waiting all the way through the Iron Bowl, waiting on Sunday after the Iron Bowl because they needed to figure out how to attack the Hugh Freeze conversation. And then ultimately here, on a Monday, they decide to announce. I mean, did they get a leg up now in recruiting that they wouldn't have otherwise got had they fired Brian Harsin yesterday afternoon? No. So to me, I don't think there's a whole lot of benefit to doing it during the season. All it does is it just tells your players, we don't care. And I think that's a really bad message to send to a bunch of guys that might be playing college football for the very last time. All right, the carousel has been moving at a ridiculous rate the last couple days. We've talked about several already in some of the videos that we've put out. We try to do a few minutes on every single Power 5 job that will be filled, what we think of the job, what we think of the challenges of the job, what we think of the new candidate. Some of the jobs and some of the coaches have been absolute home runs. Universally excited. Across the board, both fans, analysts, people that cover the sport, coaches in the profession, some have been home runs. Nebraska, absolute home run with Matt Rhule. Wisconsin feels like a really, really strong hire in Luke Fickell. Now, there's also been a couple others that have been met with, I think, some frustration. Some fan bases not totally on board, not super excited. Auburn hiring Hugh Freeze. Fan base kind of lukewarm on the decision. Feel okay about it, but not super pumped up the way they would have been if it had been Lane Kiffin. Other spots, though, teams are swinging for the fences. You still have several available jobs, I might add. Stanford is available. Georgia Tech is available. Georgia Tech feels like it might be Willie Fritz from Tulane. We'll see exactly how that whole thing unfolds, but something that we'll monitor here in the coming days. Arizona State filled their void with an alumnus. There's a lot, I think, to be excited about with some of the different job openings that are coming up. It's been talked about already. Deion Sanders just yesterday talked about the fact that he was offered the Colorado job. He said there's others. I've been told there's not. I've been told there's Colorado. And if Colorado does hire Deion Sanders, then he'll be back in the Power Five. Now it's obviously a significant, significant jump up, but it's going to be exciting to see if he does, in fact, get that job. He'll obviously become front page news. He'll become center of attention. And it will, I think, make Colorado a place that is actually talked about. I don't recall the last time Colorado was discussed a whole lot here on a platform like this. But if they hire Deion Sanders, they might get talked about every day. So that's probably beneficial for Colorado. So I think it'll be very, very interesting here when all the dust settles. I've also been told there's going to be a shocker at some point. I don't know what that shocker is. Somebody's going to step down. Somebody's going to retire. Somebody's going to go to the NFL. Who knows what that shocker looks like. But either way, we got a lot of exciting moves coming up. We'll do the best we can to try to keep you as updated as we can. Of course, this show is not live. It's taped. So if we could go live, I'd love to be able to update you accordingly on what we have up to this actual second, but we can't do that. We don't have the bandwidth or the technology or the personnel. It's just Jack, me, Jake, and Kubiak. So we don't have, and the only ones that are here every day, Kubiak, me, and Jake. So either way, we try our best and we love it. We absolutely love it, but we will keep you updated the best we can and try to get things out in a timely enough manner. So keep checking back the Always College Football page. We'll probably have more videos this week than we've had at any other point of the season up to this point. So just subscribe right there to the ESPN YouTube channel, and you can listen in, and we'll get the best reaction that you can possibly ask for in an unbiased view of just what we think of the hire, what we think of the hire. So we'll probably grade them here in a little bit as well. So might want to hang in there as well, of course, tomorrow and the next day. And the next day, we'll start to peek ahead, start to look into some of these games. So we will get in to some of these games. All right. Just too much going on news-wise the last couple of days to really dive in to some of these games. So we appreciate you being with us. Check back in here in 10 minutes. We might have a new video up. But for Jake, Jack, Mark, and myself, we love you and we appreciate you. Continue to check in here at Always College Football. And remember, it's always college football. Hey guys, it's Greg McElroy. Thanks for watching Always College Football. Make sure you like, rate, and subscribe to ESPN's YouTube channel and wherever you listen to your podcasts.